All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Margaret Bartley presiding. All of what business before this court, draw near and will be heard. God bless the United States and its honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning. I'm Judge Bartley, and I'm joined today by Judge Allen on my right and Judge Jaquith on my left. We're here today for the matter of Janine Frazier versus Dennis McDonough, docket number 224670. Counsel for the parties, please state your name and your appearance for the record, beginning with appellant's counsel. Thank you, Mr. Carpenter and Ms. Hurl. And Secretary? Okay, thank you, Mr. McNabb and Mr. Hamill. And as you know, each party has 30 minutes to present argument. Mr. Carpenter? Okay. That's fine, and you may proceed when you're ready.
May it please the court, Kenneth Carpenter appearing on behalf of Janine Frazier. I would like to begin with an overview of the statutory scheme that is at issue in this case. The Secretary argues that this court should dismiss this appeal as moot because the Secretary asserts that the full amount of benefits to which Ms. Frazier is entitled has been paid and received, and she is not entitled to any further payment from the VA. The Secretary's position is premised upon a misinterpretation of the unambiguous language of 5121 capital A. The position relies upon an interpretation that the provisions of 5121 lowercase a, parens 6, apply to or are applicable to the implementation of the provisions of 5121 capital A. The Secretary is incorrect in this interpretation of the statute. While it is true that 5121 lowercase a 6 does limit the recovery, it does so within the context of a proceeding that is authorized under that statute. Prior to the enactment of 5121 capital A, there was no proceeding available for substitution. And as a result, this court recognized that all proceedings for recovery of what are referred to as accrued benefits in the 5121 lowercase a statute are derivative actions. As derivative actions, they are brought by the statutorily identified individuals to bring their own new cause of action or claim. So an accrued benefit claim is only possible under the terms of 5121 lowercase a, and the proceedings under capital A of 5121 are proceedings with a very specific and unambiguous purpose, which is to complete a pending claim.
But doesn't 5121 capital A incorporate 5121 sub A6 as an eligibility requirement?
No, it does not, Your Honor. What it does do is to say that the persons that are eligible to be substituted upon request are those individuals who qualify to pursue accrued benefits, and that's all it says. The limitation in A6 is neither referred to or incorporated within the reference of eligibility to be a substituted party. And as the substituted party is authorized under the plain language of 5121 capital A to complete any and all pending claims of a deceased claimant. This was a statutory enactment by Congress that departed from the existing law.
Yeah, but that begs the question, I think, that's at the heart of Judge Jaquith's question, which is, you get to proceed by substitution because you're under capital A, because you're of the class of people that are identified in little a, right?
Correct.
okay, totally rational to me that Congress would have, when it created substitution, said, hey, we've already got this other list, we're going to use it, right? But then with no limitation as to amount, so your client is able to be on that list because she paid roughly $500 in funeral expenses, but could in theory then, under your view, recover many times that through the substitution.
Yes, Your Honor, because what she is doing, as directed by Congress, is completing the pending claims of her deceased father.
But if she had substituted in to complete an accrued benefits claim, she would be limited to $500.
That's correct. And that's why there is a distinction between a proceeding under lowercase a and a proceeding under capital A of 5121. And that distinction is that this court has recognized that when you proceed under lowercase a, this is a new cause of action that rests solely upon the evidence that was in the file at time of death. And as a consequence, that action has been limited by Congress prior to the enactment of 5121 capital A for A6 qualified individuals to the amount expended. There is no such limitation, and Congress clearly knew how to write such a limitation in 5121 capital A. And without that limitation, there is no limitation by the provisions of A6 of lowercase a. I would also direct
this. Isn't it like the other categories? Children are limited by the definition of child. Parents are limited by the definition of parents. Spouses are limited by the definition of spouses. And bearers of funeral and last illness expenses are limited by the cap that is placed in A6.
And that's absolutely true for derivative actions. It is not true for completing a claim. The completion of a claim is not a new claim. A derivative action is a new claim.
What about the completion of a claim for periodic monthly benefits? So you substitute in, right? Because there are two paths, right, Relaford, right? If you substitute in, is your point that the limitation in A6 doesn't apply if you substitute in for periodic monthly payments as well?
Well, Your Honor, with respect, there is no reference in 5121 capital A to the completion of claims for only monetary benefits. It is for the completion of any type of claim.
Absolutely. And so today, right, I asked you before at the one-time payment, right, and your answer was clear that, yes, that is not limited by what's in A6. My question is now, what if we were talking about periodic monthly benefits, right? And the person chose the substitution route, is your point that she would not be limited by the A6 limitation?
When she requested, as she did, by filing a request to be substituted, and that substitution was granted, then 5121 lowercase is off the table. There is no derivative action. There is no recovery of periodic monetary benefits. There is only the completion of the pending claims, which in this case were pending before the board. And when Ms. Frazier was substituted, the board's dismissal of that based upon her father's death was reinstated, and that pending claim was completed, resulting in a substantial award of past due benefits.
I don't mean to press you. I just really would like a yes or no, right? If, in fact, there was periodic monthly benefits that would qualify if somebody wanted to do the accrued benefits under little a,
yes.
Okay, but they choose the different path of substitution under big A.
Yes.
In that case, would that person be limited?
No.
Okay.
And Mr. Carpenter, just a kind of a takeoff on Judge Allen's question. If we accept your view, couldn't anyone, even someone who is a complete stranger to the veteran, but who actually fits under small A6, they could get, and they could receive periodic monthly, the veteran's periodic monthly benefits or a one-time lump sum. I don't care which one.
Either or both.
Someone who's completely unknown to the veteran.
Well, I would not say necessarily unknown to the veteran, because I cannot envision a circumstance in which a total stranger would say, oh, I would like to pay the funeral expense.
Well, but if they knew, they might be entitled to the rest of the veteran's substituted benefits,
that is absolutely correct, Your Honor. And the intention of Congress in creating 51A was to ensure that pending claims were A, resolved, and B, paid. And there is no limitation in the statutory language, and I would direct the Court's attention to the Secretary's interpretation of the statute found in regulation at 38 CFR 3.1010A. In the very last sentence, it says, any benefits ultimately awarded are payable to the substitute. There is no distinction between a substitute who is a surviving spouse or a dependent child, or a dependent parent with a substitute who paid the last expenses. And as a consequence, the Secretary has recognized that when benefits are ultimately made payable, they are payable to the substitute, because Congress recognized that it was fundamentally unfair for the Secretary to have a windfall, in this case, of hundreds of thousands of dollars that were due and owing to the veteran during his life, but not paid because the appeal process went on so long that the veteran died while the appeal was pending.
What was the purpose of Big A?
To complete pending claims. And upon the completion of pending claims, the disposition is either finally an entitlement to benefits.
For anybody.
For the individual who bore the expenses. And that individual in this case is a family member. As this Court knows, I've litigated the question of whether adult children are able to step in to the shoes. And that position was rejected. But 5121 allows an adult child, as in this case, to pay those expenses and then see to it that her father's pending claims were resolved and he was paid through the substituted appellant to receive all of the benefits due and owing.
So where do you find in the legislative history that the purpose was to complete the claim? I mean, I think that in regular lingo, and I have the legislative history here, it's so that people didn't have to go to the back of the line and start all over again. That's not quite syncing up with what you just said.
And I am not relying upon the legislative history, Your Honor. I am relying upon the language used by Congress. And the language used by Congress is distinct from any other circumstance within the VA statutory scheme in which somebody is allowed to complete the claim of another. And that's the plain language that is used. The purpose of substitution shall be to complete a pending claim. And that's what happened in this case. She was substituted. The VA recognized that they owed several hundred thousand dollars in past due benefits to Mr. Frazier. Had they been paid during his life, they would have been paid to him. But because he died, Congress provided in 5110 for a substitute.
Do you agree with me that if we accept your interpretation, and it sounds like you already did agree with me, but I just want to be you to be perfectly clear, you agree with me that if we accept your interpretation, then someone unrelated and unknown to the veteran who simply combed through obituary notices on legacy and realized this individual is a veteran might be able to collect?
Not might be, would be, if would there be. Was an award okay. of okay. past due benefits.
Would be.
To me, the language of the statute is clear. There can't be any question about what Congress's purpose was when it says, for the purpose of completing a claim. The secretary in 3.1010A explains eligibility. And eligibility is any party who qualifies under lowercase a 1 through 6. And one of those is 6, and that category is the extent of what is required to be eligible. And once eligible, then that person stands in the shoes of the deceased claimant, as Janine Frazier does for her father.
Doesn't 3.1010A limit the recovery to periodic monetary benefits?
It does in subparagraph G, and to the extent that it does, it is inconsistent with the plain language of 5121 capital A, and therefore is invalid and unenforceable.
But your argument today, then, though, would be as to the non-accrued benefits, right, the one lump sum, right, okay, then the regulation could come into play. But your argument today would be that Ms. Frazier is not limited to $500 even with respect to the periodic monthly benefits.
Absolutely.
So, doesn't it just seem, weird that somebody would pay $500 but then be able to recover several hundred thousand when the cases say you can't, an estate can't even get recovery?
Prior to the enactment of 5121A, absolutely. After the enactment, no.
And so you think Congress actually meant that, or did it just by accident? I mean, and it may be that Congress can do it by accident and we have to enforce it, but do you think that they, because my reading of the legislative history really was they just wanted to make sure that the people who paid funeral expenses got them reimbursed.
Well, I have a slightly different take on the legislative history. I think the legislative history was addressing the ending of the oppressive policy that when a veteran dies, his or her claim dies with them. That is an obscene policy and was the policy until Congress changed it. And when Congress changed it, whether they did so purposefully, consciously, intentionally, what they wrote is unambiguous.
I think what they wrote is silent. Right, I think the who is clear. You go to the list in 21, little a, right? But your point is you don't take the entire list. You take the list without the limitation that would have capped it at the amount of.
Because the only requirement in 5110 capital A is that you be eligible to receive accrued benefits. And under A6, lowercase, the individual who bore the expenses is eligible to receive limited accrued benefits. Congress clearly knew how to write a limitation into the statute. And had Congress wanted to write a limitation into, or after this court decides this case favorably, the Congress may amend that to limit it. But, Your Honor, the history of the accrued benefit statute was, and I've lived through it, is that initially it was 1 year, the cap on the total amount of past due benefits, whether several hundred thousand dollars, you only got 1 year. And then Congress eventually reduced or increased that to 2 years and eventually took the cap off altogether. This is the clear direction in which Congress has been moving to see to it that because the VA cannot complete the appellate process in a reasonable time, that the death of a claimant should not be an impediment to the Secretary's obligation to pay.
Mr. Carpenter, how does your any and all benefits do the veteran argument square with our Relaford case, which focuses on accrued benefits for both, under both 5121 Big A and 5121?
I don't think it's an issue of squaring. Relaford simply addresses a completely different issue. The issue in this case, and I am concerned that we have lost sight of the fact that this appeal was brought because the board dismissed four claims that were pending, a claim for special monthly comp under 1114S and three separate claims for automobile adaptive provisions and housing adaptive provisions. I'm sorry.
None of those are periodic.
And none of those are periodic. And clearly, just as there is no distinction in 5121 capital A for periodic benefits as there is in lowercase a, there is no reason to believe that the limitation in A6 is somehow impugned or inferred or can be inferred or should be inferred by this court. This court should look at what the plain language is and what the stated purpose is as articulated in the plain language used by Congress in 5121 capital A.
Can 5121 capital A stand by itself without a payment provision?
Yes.
5121 has a payment.
Yes, Your Honor, because it's illogical and unreasonable to suggest that Congress wanted a ceremonial completion of claims without any payment.
Or an indication of their relatedness.
Right.
No, but, I mean the relatedness of 5121 and 5121 capital A.
Their relatedness is stated in the opening phrase of what makes a person eligible to be substituted. And what makes a person eligible to be substituted is that they are eligible to receive accrued benefits. Unless...
Grant, do you have further?
No.
Thank you, Mr. Carpenter.
Thank you.
And Mr. McNabb?
Thank you, Your Honor. For the Secretary, I'm Mark McNabb. With me at Council table is Mark Hamill. May it please the Court. The Court should affirm the Board's holding that the housing automobile-related claims at issue here do not survive the death of the veteran and reject the appellant's argument to the contrary because the appellant asked the Court to do three inappropriate things. It asked the Court first to reject its own prior reading of Section 5121A, second, to read the statute providing a procedural option as providing both the right to benefits and standing, and finally, in doing so, to read the statute in a way that produces arbitrary and absurd results. The Secretary urges the Court to do none of those things and to affirm the Board's decision.
Could I ask it just so we're on the same page? So the special, let's just take specially adapted housing. I'll pick one of them, right? You'd agree that that's a benefit, right, under the law?
Yes, sir.
And it's a benefit under the law that's administered by Secretary McDonough?
Yes, Your Honor.
So 5121 big A, right, talks about a claim for any benefit under a law administered by the Secretary, right? And that seems to describe, well, you specially adapted housing, right? So, I mean, Congress clearly knows how to use the language of a periodic monthly benefit, right? And the Secretary substituted that language into the regulation in place of any benefit. So why shouldn't, on that point, at least, the plain language of Big A encompasses these benefits, right?
No, Your Honor. We don't agree with that. The first part of Section 5121, A1 is defining the claimant.
Are you which one? Big A, little A?
Big A.
Big A. Okay.
The substitution.
Right.
Statute. The substitution statute opens with a definition of claimant that purely repeats the definition of a claimant. 38 U.S.C. 5101 says the term claimant means any individual applying for or submitting a claim for any benefit under the laws administered by the Secretary. So that language is just what a claimant is.
Well, so let me just ask you this then. But under this reading, you'd say that substitution would be tied to a claimant, a veteran, let's say, who has a claim for a non-accrued benefit, a one-time benefit like specially adapted housing, right? Okay? Meaning, you're saying that the use of the phrase any benefit under a law administered by the secretary is just defining a claimant.
That's right.
So am I wrong then to understand the secretary to be saying Congress enacted a statute that said you can substitute into any claim that is administered by the secretary, but you can only recover it if, in fact, it's an accrued benefit?
No, Your Honor. The first part is defining, it says if a claimant dies while the claim is pending. That's what the first part is saying. And then, so then we get to the if that happens, then, and then is the substitution portion. And then the person who would be eligible to receive accrued benefits due to that claimant under 5121A may substitute. And so that then tells you who may use the procedural path of 5121A.
I agree it tells you who. I just think that Congress also told us for what in using any benefit.
No, Your Honor, and we would rather take the approach that Judge Jakewith spoke about, which is that 5121A does not stand alone. It does not authorize payment of any benefit. It simply creates a new path. It is 5121 and 5121 small a, but 5121 that provides for any payment whatsoever.
Then why did the Secretary change the language, any benefit under a law administered by the Secretary, when it enacted the regulation? If that didn't do the work that I'm suggesting, then why not just say what Congress said?
But if I'm understanding you correctly, at that point, we are at the end of the path. At the beginning of the path is the definition of a claimant, and if a claimant dies while there is a claim pending, and then what can happen is, and only what can happen is, that someone may substitute in if they are eligible for accrued benefits. And the only statute that authorized payment of any benefits to a substitute or to an accrued benefits claimant is 5121.
But then the beginning of 5121 capital A gets back to what the claim is. So isn't the most natural reading of 5121 big A, setting aside for a moment the appositives in between that talk about eligibility, here, if a claimant dies while a claim for any benefit is pending, an eligible person may file a request to be substituted as the claimant for the purposes of processing the claim to completion.
Well, but the claim is processed, Your Honor, to completion. That's correct. But for the and then results in
the claim is for any benefit, according to 5121 capital A.
But the payment can only be for that in 5121. The only authorized receipt of any benefit payment is as authorized in 5121.
So the point of the Secretary is Congress said we're going to create a system by which somebody can substitute in.
They can't get paid.
But they can't get paid. That because VA has so much extra time on its hands, we'll just let them do that, right? I mean,
no, Your Honor, that's not our reading of the second portion of the 5121A1. We believe that the limitation imposed is that you may only substitute in for this claim if you are entitled for this claim to receive accrued benefits.
So then you can't substitute in your view, for a specially adapted housing claim, even though the statute, as Judge Jakewith just read, talks about any benefit administered by the Secretary.
Yes, Your Honor, that's our view. And again, because the only place that it talks about any law benefit under a law administered by the Secretary is where it just repeats what a claimant is. So the question is, if a claimant has a claim, then the people that may use this path are people who are entitled to accrued benefits. And that's what the court held in Relaford, that an eligible person takes the place of the deceased claimant in order to process the original claim to completion, albeit for the purposes of accrued benefits.
So who? So in Relaford, right, what was the benefit?
In Relaford, it was a regular monetary periodic benefit.
Right, it was an accrued benefit claim. So why in the world should we put emphasis on the fact that the court used the language of accrued benefits in a case about accrued benefits?
Because under Appellant's reading, that's not so. They're saying that 5121 creates an entirely new entitlement, and we're saying that it doesn't, that it creates a new path. to entitlement. That's what the court held in Relaford and in Breedlove.
Well, but in cases having to do with accrued benefits, I mean, so maybe if you would have asked the judges in Relaford, they would have said, yes, we mean only for accrued benefits. But, I mean, you know, they didn't talk about lots of things in the case, right?
Yes, and the actual holding in Relaford was there was a notice problem.
Yes, sir.
Didn't have anything to do with the nature of the benefits.
Oh, that's correct, Your Honor. it was that in that case that the new claimant was not told that they could choose which path they could choose. And again, because there are two paths to the same benefit, the only benefit authorized, 5121 is the only statute that authorizes a benefit for these claimants. 5121A authorizes a new and alternate path to the same benefits. But again, it doesn't authorize any payment.
But if you trace back the the origins of this any benefit jump into and pursue to completion, that wasn't a statutory accident. That grew out of a report by the Veterans Disability Benefits Commission that a VA representative told the House Veteran Affairs Committee, we got no problem with 5121 Big A because it implements that recommendation to allow the veteran survivors to pursue the veteran's due but unpaid benefits and any additional benefits by continuing the claim that was pending when the veteran died, including presenting new evidence.
Right, Your Honor, and that's what it did, is it created a new and different choice of a path. That path could put you ahead in the line, it could allow you additional rights to development, but it did not create any new authority for payment of benefits.
Well, a new path to a broader goal.
No, Your Honor, because the only goal created, the only payment authorization is in 5121. And so 5121 alone provides for payment of benefits. And 5121 itself is limited to accrued benefits for periodic monetary benefits.
But is there 5121 capital A, big A?
It's 5121, yep. Plain. So A is the list of the limits, but 5121 itself is the payment. It's in its title is that it's, you know, it's apologies.
What are we looking for? 5121A?
5121's title. Payment
in case of death of claimant.
I'm sorry, that's 5121A, Your Honor. 5121 is titled payment of certain accrued benefits upon death of the beneficiary. It's 5121 that produces any right to these benefits at all, to payment of any benefit.
I think the problem that we're having is, well, I can only speak for myself, is that there's nothing saying what you're saying in the statute. I mean, does the fact that I'm looking for some kind of, like, language that would pull these two together in the way that you are arguing that they align? And I get that they would align.
Right.
And they seem to, but that A doesn't actually say everything here is supposed to be in complete alignment with 5121.
Well, Your Honor, I would say that I think that's clear both from its double usage of the reference to eligibility coming from 5121, both in A1 and in the limitation section of B, which is that those who are eligible to make a claim under this section shall be determined in accordance with 5121. So again, you are only eligible to use 5121 at A for a particular claim if you have 5121 eligibility.
Well, but that's just a list. I mean, why isn't it equally plausible to think that what Congress said is, you know, it had been battered about the head and the shoulders, as Mr. Carpenter says, about the fact that claims were dying, right, because VA was taking a long time to adjudicate them. So they're going to develop a substitution, right? So one of the first things they need to do is figure out who can substitute. They already had a list for written down in little A, 1 through 6. It seems to me rational to say, well, we've already got a list, so we've got the who checked off, right?
That's a status list, not a type of claims list.
That's true, but that is, Your Honor, A2. A itself is the portion that provides for payment of anything. And 5121 small a says except for for provisions not relevant here, that periodic monetary benefits may be paid. So again, when they talk about in 5121A that the limitations are those provided in 5121, again, it's 5121 alone that provides for any payment of any benefit, and it specifically limits that payment of benefits in A to periodic monetary benefits due and owing at the time of death. So we believe that.
And why wouldn't Congress, though, have used that phrase then, right? Periodic monetary benefits other than insurance and servicemen's indemnity under laws administered by the Secretary. Why would Congress have then cut off the first part of that and used any benefit?
Well, Your Honor, again, I don't think they did that because they only used any benefit when defining the claimant and not when defining the new claimant. That is, the claimant who died is the only place that any benefit is used. But what may happen if a claimant dies with a claim is limited.
So that's
not what 5121A says.
Right. So the point is, if somebody dies and they have one claim pending, okay, it is under a law administered by the Secretary, and that is specially adapted housing here, right? And I am a surviving spouse of that person, let's just say, right? So I am eligible to receive – let me finish the question before you shake your head at me. I am eligible to receive an accrued benefit. I am eligible to receive an accrued benefit. Now, there isn't an accrued benefit here, but there is an open claim for any benefit administered by the Secretary. And the Secretary's position is that Congress didn't allow that person to be substituted under Big A?
Your Honor, you're not eligible to receive an accrued benefit when there is no accrued benefit. So, no.
Sure. She's eligible. If I am eligible to receive an accrued benefit, right, it means I am in the class of people. There may be no nothing in the trough for me to get, but I am one of the pigs that can get in line for the trough. I'm in line. It's just there's nothing in the trough.
We don't agree with that, Your Honor. That 5121 allows people to receive payment of accrued benefits. It creates the only path to payment of benefits, and that's what it does in A. It then provides a list of people who would be eligible to do that. But the eligibility is as a whole. It's 5121 as a whole. It's not just appearing on the list.
I don't understand what that means at all.
Well, that the death.
So a surviving spouse of a veteran, are you telling me that you can't say that person is eligible to receive an accrued benefit? Now, they might be getting a receipt of zero because there's nothing to take. But are you saying this is a bit like the old saying from law school that, you know, a living person has no heirs, right, because you can always disinherit people?
No, Your Honor. We're simply saying that, again, 5121 provides a basis for payment of benefits, and it's the only basis, and that it then explains who might receive those payments. But both things must exist for you to be a qualified, eligible beneficiary. There has to be a benefit, and you have to be on the list. And so a person in a case with no other pending claims, then there are pending claims for accrued benefits of periodic monetary benefits, then there are no potential people to use the avenue of 5121A. There's nothing for them to use it to because it's simply a new, an alternate, and largely preferable method of getting to the only benefits they might be entitled to, which are those defined in 5121 and authorized in 5121. Again, because that's the only place that authorizes any payment of anything.
But if Congress had intended the substitute eligibility language to also cabin the claim, wouldn't they have said so? Wouldn't they have said instead of any benefit completing the benefit claim, as the concluding language would have said, the accrued benefits claim or the periodic monetary benefits claim?
Well, they could have done that, but they also alternately both limited the who in the second part of that sentence to people who can receive accrued benefits, And also, again, sort of made clear in the limitation section that you're eligible to make a claim to use this path, but that determination of whether you're eligible to use this path is in accordance with 5121. So it leaves to 5121 all these decisions. It doesn't produce anything more than a new and alternate path, and we think that's what the court in Breedlove and Relaford said, and then also would otherwise.
Breedlove and Rusick, a Federal Circuit case, focus on the any benefit language. They don't get bogged down in the accrued benefits part of it like Relaford does.
But that is the benefit that is the only benefit there is. That's the only benefit that's authorized.
There are a lot of other benefits, as Judge Allen went over with you. There are several at issue in this case.
Well, those are benefits for the veteran. The only benefits authorized for anyone on the list are created and authorized in 5121. 5121 says that benefits may be paid. 5121A doesn't authorize payment of anything.
To use Judge Allen's technical legal term, that seems a very weird way to do it.
Well, Your Honor, before 5121, there was no eligibility for the non-veteran. And 5121 created a benefit, and it's the only place that's created and authorized. And so that's its limits control.
But substitution is designed to advance the claim that the veteran had, right? Because you are stepping into his or her boots, right?
To pursue your own benefit, the only thing that you are eligible for. So you're stepping into their boots because they have the duty to assist. They are further along in the process. You're stepping into where they were, but as the court in Relaford and Breedlove said, to pursue what you're eligible for. And so the end result hasn't changed. It didn't authorize anything new. 5121 is still the only authorization for payment. It provided a new path, and that path is largely better, which is why in the Relaford case, the Secretary sort of automatically put someone there. But there are reasons you might not want to be there, and so you have an option to not be there. But you're still pursuing the same path, which is the only thing that is the only authorized payment there is, which is in 5121, and that's for accrued benefits.
Sounds like an effort to re-engineer a statutory change that was designed to remedy a problem of sounds maybe an unjust enrichment, benefits withheld, and thus never paid because of obstacles for survivors pursuing claims. So
we agree.
Pretty clear statutory section was passed with the history that I described earlier, and now the Secretary is trying to reverse engineer it to make it impassable.
Not at all, Your Honor. We agree that it presented an option that resolved a problem that some people were having, which was starting at the back of the line, relying on a record that already existed without the potential for additional development, et cetera. So all that was changed was how you may pursue the benefits that are authorized for you. And you may choose to, and it may be favorable to you, to choose to step in where the claim was at the time and to have to proceed from there. But again, what you're proceeding from there for hasn't changed because 5121A doesn't authorize anything new. It only authorizes a new procedure. And we believe the court correctly viewed it that way in Breedlove and Relaford, et cetera.
I just had one technical question, which is, has anything changed as far as VA knows in terms of the payment of the $500 less attorney's fees?
Your Honor, where it's, as of yesterday, it's left where we left it with you, which is that payment was authorized, payment was sent, payment was returned, and then in October, appellant was informed that she could have payment whenever she asked for it, at wherever she asked for it. And no response to that October letter has been received. Appellant's not requested receipt of the $597 since the October letter.
Thanks.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Well, that makes sense, right? Because the whole thing's disputed.
Well,
that's the Secretary's determination of all she's going to get.
Yes,
that's
Your Honor.
Obviously not the appellant's.
Sure, although under no circumstances does the appellant believe she's entitled to less than $597. So I don't think receipt of a partial payment would in any way impact that argument. Right. If there are no further questions, we ask the court to affirm the board's decision. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. McNair. Mr. Carpenter, you may move ahead with rebuttal.
I'd like to address a comment that the Secretary made about before the enactment of 5121A, no non-veteran could pursue under lowercase a. Well, there was never a limitation and still isn't a limitation on who pays those expenses. Those expenses don't have to be paid by a veteran or a descendant of a veteran. As we talked in the first part of this argument, they could be paid by a total stranger. And that total stranger, prior to the enactment, would have been entitled to get the cost reimbursed for those expenses. So I think the government, frankly, does not really understand the statutory structure. The statutory structure here is, and one of the things that the Secretary said was, is that there's no obligation that 5121a is based upon the payment of a benefit. And I would agree with that to the extent that it presupposes that there will be payment. 5121A does not make that assumption. The only authorization for the substituted appellant is to complete the appeal or to complete the pending claim. Completion may result in a denial. And so all of the efforts undertaken by the substitute on behalf of the deceased claimant result in a nil. There's no recovery. But if there is recovery, then this discussion by the Secretary of there's somehow a difference in the payment obligation results when a claim is pursued to completion and the Secretary is deemed to be obligated to pay that award. Why else would you complete the claim? There's no reason for a substituted claimant to complete the claim to simply get validation that there was entitlement to those benefits. And let's look for a moment at what the board did in this case. Mr. Frazier died August 27 of 2020. June 2021, Ms. Frazier filed her request to be substituted, and it was granted on June the 4th. On December 16th, 2021, she submitted argument, and on April the 1st, 2022, the Board of Veterans Appeals decision made 9 decisions on 9 pending claims. They denied, they dismissed the special adapted housing claim. They denied the automobile claim. They granted.
Any argument made on the housing and automobile benefit issues?
No specific argument was made on those, no. But frankly, there wasn't any argument, as I recall, made on. No, there was not, Your Honor. I'm sorry. Now, your question is, in the written additional argument, was there a specific argument made? No, there was not. But then they go on to grant sleep apnea. They grant the hypertrophy from the benign prosthetic hypertrophic claim. They grant the venous insufficiency for the lower bilateral condition. They grant hypertension. They deny hypertension, and they grant a 10% rating for hypertension after February 27, 2018. And then they grant aid and attendance, and they deny, they dismiss the housebound. The issues in this case involve a claim for eligibility for special monthly compensation under 1114S. That was not even addressed. They addressed it only as a housebound claim. The housebound claim has criteria that are similar to aid and attendance, but fundamentally different from part two or paragraph two of 1114S is S1, which requires a single disability totally rated and additional disabilities at 60% or more. And Mr. Frazier would have qualified for that benefit, and yet that benefit, which is a periodic benefit, was dismissed along with the four or three other non-periodic benefits. So the entire discussion from the Secretary relative to payment overlooks the fact that under 5110 capital A, the only benefit that a substituted claimant gets is the right to complete the claim process. He or she is not contemplated to be receiving past due benefits or periodic monetary benefits as under 5121 lowercase a. And therefore, we have fundamentally different functions under lowercase a than we do under capital A. And under capital A, Congress has clearly articulated that there is a path, there is a means to complete claims, and then the Secretary's own regulation at 38 CFR 3.10A says that any benefits ultimately awarded are payable to the substitute. Now, that takes out any ambiguity or uncertainty about the intent of Congress by the Secretary's own regulation.
But at the start of the same paragraph, it limits the benefits to periodic monetary ones.
It does, Your Honor. And that does not make that statement a correct statement under law. And that does not authorize, nothing in that statement authorizes the dismissal of that. If we accept the government's theory of why you substitute, you just had the right to receive a dismissal. Well, that's not a completion of the claim. That's a subverting of the adjudication of the claim. You're taken off of the playing field. You don't have the right to have the claim completed. And that is unlawful. That's contrary to the plain language of 5121 capital A. When the Secretary granted substitution, allowed the daughter of Mr. Frazier to be substituted to complete all of his claims. And four of those claims in this case were unlawfully dismissed, and that dismissal must be reversed by this court.
What if we consider 5121 capital A to be ambiguous?
Well, that raises all kinds of problems, Your Honor.
That's why I bring it up now. We're all here.
I'm just trying to organize my thoughts as to how to present them. The first problem that would create is the inherent conflict in the statements in the regulation versus the language of the statute. And it is a question of what it is this court would find ambiguous. I don't believe this court could find ambiguous the direction that a substituted claimant is authorized to complete a claim. If that's the case, then that is what controls the outcome or disposition. If the ambiguity is what does eligibility mean, well, eligibility is simply whether you qualify to receive accrued benefits. I can't see how that would be ambiguous, but if you were to find it ambiguous, then you would go by the plain language of that, but only to the extent that you qualify to be eligible to receive. And in regards to the final question that was posed by Judge Allen about the receipt of the money that is due allegedly for the reimbursement, her claim has never been under 5121 lowercase a. There is no right to that money. Yes, the Secretary is trying to get her to accept it.
Well, didn't she file under both? She filed.
She did, Your Honor.
And accrued benefits.
And she was only granted substitution. She was not recognized, and in fact, under the Secretary's regulation at, again, 3.10C, the final sentence of subparagraph 2 says that a claimant for accrued benefits may waive the right to substitute in writing over the claimant's signature. The waiver was implicit because she was granted substitution and proceeded with the pending appeals. That claim was reinstated by the board after having been dismissed, and it was decided, and it was decided adversely to her. So there is no basis in law or fact for the government to suggest that there is a reason to dismiss any of the appeal issues that were dismissed. I see that I've run over time. Unless there's any further questions, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Carpenter. And the court thanks both parties for their arguments. The case is submitted for consideration and will come down and greet counsel.